Now, today we had a big contrast in temperature across the UK, just 12 degrees over coastal parts of eastern England with cloudy skies, but in the sunshine in northwest Wales at RAF Mona, just up the road from Llanfair Pwllgwyng, the temperature got to 21 Celsius, that's 70 in Fahrenheit.
My beard, it's quite impressive. It's sending you a message. I'm gonna make your hairy dreams come true. My beard, you know you want it. Now, baby, it's time to get on it. Girl, don't be afraid, cause I am bringing my beard to you.
G'day and welcome to the Drunken Beersman Podcast. I'm your host, Drunkle Dan, and this week I thought in honour of Force Friday this past couple of weeks, we'd take a look at some of the new Expanded Universe novels to come out, just for a bit of background for you lovely ladies and gentlemen. So, to give the ultimate background on what the fucking Expanded Universe is, the Expanded Universe is, funnily enough, the universe that expands beyond, you know, the movies, the books, or what have you. So, 8 years after the release of Jedi, Timothy Zahn and Random House released our first glimpse of what could happen after the conclusion of the greatest trilogy ever seen or told. With instructions of "give me the first 5 years" from Lucas, Zahn, and who was an avid fan, set some of the most fundamental ground rules and facts of what would become a convoluted, wheezy, contradictory expanded universe that spanned a whopping 23 years before being scrapped upon the purchase of the beloved franchise by Disney. This year saw the release of the first books in the new canon, minus one from last year, with the Marvel method seemed to be such the biggest thing at the moment, they decided to stick with what works, and thus we are seeing a canon that is all-encompassing. That's right, kids and cats. Everything from the pop-up book you brought your nephew Jimmy to the release of just this past week, which is Aftermath. Everything counts in the new canon. Everything you read counts. Unlike, you know, the old Expanded Universe where there were books that literally contradicted the book that came before it. So I thought we'd take a look back at what the last 12 months has brought us in preparation for the big event coming out in December. So, coming out number one, the first book released was A New Dawn. So, released ahead of Star Wars Rebel, this novel served as an introduction to the former Padawan Kanan, formerly Caleb, and the foxy co-leader of Ghost One, Hera, who was actually the daughter of Cham Syndulla, who we'll get to in just a little bit. It's set roughly 8 years after Revenge of the Sith and about 11 years before A New Hope, and was written by John Jackson Miller. Now, John Jackson Miller is the author, amongst many other novels, is also the author of the Lost Tribe of the Sith series, which ended up featuring rather prominently towards the end of the what they're now calling the Legends run, which was The Fate of the Jedi. Look, just as a quick aside, it is a really great series of books that focuses on a planet of Sith that somehow fell between the cracks during the Great Hyperspace War. But that's another story. So, look, it copped a fair bit of flack back at the time for its prequel-esque sort of attention to political detail and intrigue and its underuse of its main protagonist, namely Lord Vidian. Although we did get to see a young Rey Sloan, who we'll also come to later in the show. Now, look, Lord Vidian was a great villain. He was this sort of weird, fucked-up cross between General Grievous and Count Dooku. This sort of, you know, plastic surgery, bionic-obsessed motherfucker who was, you know, at one stage or another, the main hand of the newly crowned Sheev Palpatine. But me personally, I quite enjoyed the introduction of the players, and I found it a really good entry into the new Expanded Universe. Kanan and Hera were well laid out with some tension straight out the bat that had that would have had no part turning up in a child's TV show. When I say tension, ladies and gentlemen, I mean sexual tension. Fucking, don't mind me, I've had quite a few drinks to be drinking. I too was fairly disappointed in the fact that Lord Vidian didn't survive the novel, as he was quite an excellent villain and was criminally underused. If I had my way, I would have used him somewhere further down the line. Think those creepy pictures of the droid hand from J.J. Abrams' sort of little mystery box fucking pictures that he released earlier, last year I think it was. But all in all, it really did cast Kanan in a solo-esque light, and one that is noticeably lacking from the series but could well be found in the Marvel comic run. It also cast Hera as a cocky young revolutionary who was wonderfully written. Like, I really did enjoy this fucking novel. You got to get a real good feel for how Rebels itself is, and like I said, it was nice to see, sort of, good to see the state of the universe a few years after Revenge of the Sith. It sort of helped fill in some of those gaps. You just sort of got to ignore about a third of the novel that's just full of political intrigue and falls flatter than a souffle prepared during turbulence. Number two sees the release of Tarkin. Now, this was released in November of last year and was written by James Luceno. Now, James Luceno is the mastermind behind Darth Plagueis. Now, look, just as a quick side note on Darth Plagueis. Darth Plagueis holds the rather dubious note of being a canon character, as he was mentioned in Revenge of the Sith. And this novel really fleshed out who and what Plagueis was. Now, I've got to say, I still recommend this book to anybody to read if you're a Star Wars fan, if only for the fact that it actually makes Phantom Menace a movie worth fucking watching. It adds a whole different element to that whole entire movie, and in fact the whole prequel trilogy, that you know, you really got to watch. Puts it into a fair bit of perspective, especially from the, in that novel at least, unnamed fucking Palpatine, the evil fucking evil little shit who would one day become Darth Sidious and thus Emperor of the Galactic Empire. Now, Tarkin itself takes us into the history of Willef Tarkin and how he fitted into the power structure of Sheev, and of course it's also infamous for giving Palpatine his ridiculous first name. And of course those in the know also spotted a couple of little factoids from the now defunct expanded universe. Now, Luceno really is a master of what he does. Plagueis holds the dubious honour of being a canon character without an official history, at least for now, or at least again, I should say. And this novel by far pushed the limits of what could be kept and what could be hinted at from the old universe. Because he is mentioned in Revenge of the Sith, like I said, Darth Plagueis the Wise, Master of Sidious, is in fact a canon character. And his biography was in fact one of the best Star Wars novels I had read. Like, truly, not only did it give you a good background on Plagueis himself, but it also gave us an excellent sort of background on who Palpatine was, where he came from, and what ended up happening there. It's set about 5 years after Sith, and Tarkin shows us the history of Willef Tarkin from his childhood to his grooming by a plucky senator's attaché to leading hand on the construction of the Death Star. It centers around Tarkin and the, at the moment, mysterious Darth Vader as they attempt to track down some thieves who have stolen Tarkin's ship, which leads us through this whole storyline involving the Separatist Alliance pardon, and goes much beyond. It also happens to reveal a rather big secret about the Jedi Temple, which I'm not going to go into right here in case you haven't read it. One of the cool things I did like about this book is there's all these little hints to Luceno's previous novels, the most notable one being in the form of 114D, who was a droid from Darth Plagueis that passed from that Darth Plagueis acquired that ended up passing on to Palpatine. Well, it makes an appearance here. It also sort of touches on Tarkin's suspicions of Darth Vader's true identity, because he worked with Anakin during the Clone Wars, of course, and how he slips into the ruling council that Palpatine surrounds himself with. Look, I like I said, I really did love this novel. It is a book that's worth looking at. It is well written. The characters are fleshed out. It sets a cracking pace, and there's fucking almost nothing to complain about. It is still one of the best, if not the best Star Wars novel to come out amongst the new canon, and will no doubt go down as the benchmark novel to compare new books against. So, shortly after that, well, I should say shortly after that, after quite a gap, we've got Heir to the Jedi. So, this was released in March this year, and is the highly anticipated novel that features the story of Luke from the first person. Now, this was written by Kevin Hearn, which is, in fact, his first sort of entry into the Star Wars universe, and we take a look at Luke after A New Hope and his battle of being a self-taught Jedi. Now, look, it was nice to actually hear a bit of Luke before, you know, the event this year and where he's ended up. But the novel copped a fair bit of shit, and I've got to admit, quite rightly so, for not delivering on its promise. That is, the conceit of being a standard mission, and I mean, like, look, when you hear that you're going to get a novel about Luke Skywalker, Luke motherfucking Skywalker, after A New Hope, you expect some sort of, you know, deep-cut Jedi shit. This isn't what you're going to get. The conceit of the novel is rather basic. A standard mission goes horribly awry with a love interest that's destined never to be. It was never going to work. It really was never going to work. Add to that a real depressing lack of actual fucking Jedi learning sort of shit, and you end up with a novel that fell rather flat. I mean, like, if you're a completist, read it, but I mean, you're not going to miss it, and to be perfectly honest, you're not really going to fucking enjoy it. Which was a real disappointment to me. I mean, I looked out for this novel as much as the next man. I love Luke Skywalker. I am a Skywalker man. But this, oh, man, it fell so flat it's not funny. April saw The Lords of the Sith being released, which was written by legendary sci-fi fantasy author Paul S. Kemp. Lords of the Sith had the pressure to be awesome, and fuck me, it did not disappoint. Sitting around, Palpatine and Vader stuck on the world of Ryloth, which is one of those expanding universe worlds that's happened to be made officially canon, and also is the homeworld of the Twi'lek, whatever the fuck, you know, those, you know, the tail-headed motherfuckers from Return of the Jedi, especially. Having been shot down by Cham Syndulla, who you may remember I mentioned earlier as the father of Hera Syndulla, one of the lead characters from Star Wars Rebels, and they're stranded on this planet with nothing but the dark side, their wits, and a couple of stooges to help them, along with Hera Syndulla's father chasing them, nipping at their fucking heels while trying to launch a full-blown rebellion off the ground. It was great to see some of the dynamic between these two. I mean, like, put it this way, we see none of this in the prequels because, you know, he's still a dedicated Jedi, Anakin that is, and by the time we get around to the original trilogy, we're seeing an old married couple, pretty much. To see the instruction and constant testing by Sheev that he puts upon his young apprentice, and to catch a glimpse of the cybernetic Vader as he slowly loses touch with Anakin and his role in Order 66... and all the rest is a true pleasure to read, with an intriguing psychological look at the mindset of the so-called Chosen One, who has such an impact on this universe we all know and love. Now, once again, in this novel we really get to see the degradation of, you know, Anakin Skywalker, you know, Darth Vader, and the true separation that happens here. There are times where Vader questions the history of Anakin Skywalker, and you get to see the true fracturing of the psyche, which I found really interesting. Add to this really weird, fucked up, you know, testing that Palpatine puts him under, while having a look at the, you know, the fledgling little strands of what would one day become, you know, the conquering fucking rebellion, is really worth having a look at. It's also nice to see Palpatine actually utilize some of these, you know, Sith powers in a fashion that we don't get to see within the cinematic universe. Look, it was well worth the read. I mean, once again, it sort of suffered from trying to jam a whole bunch of shit in there that really didn't need to be in there. But in the end, we really did love it. Um, This July saw the release of Dark Disciple. Now, this was written by Christy Goldie, who first cut her teeth on the Fate of the Jedi series, which was the last series of books to come out amongst the Legend series of books, which focuses once again on the Lost Tribe of the Sith and them coming to, you know, really re-enter the universe at large, or the galaxy at large, I should say. Now, this story, which brings together two of the Expanding Universe's favourites together, was actually copied together from unused Clone Wars scripts featuring Asajj Ventress and Quinlan Vos. Now, they've come together in this story to assassinate Dooku on an officially sanctioned mission by the Jedi Council, at least by Vos, and sort of chronicles an alternate take, if you will, on how Vos fell to the dark side. Now, Asajj Ventress, as we all know, was created during the run of the Clone Wars series, and Quinlan Vos, whether people know it or not, was actually based upon a background character that you could see in The Phantom Menace. From there, he sort of went from fucking crazier to crazier to crazier to crazier, and ended up with George Lucas actually sanctioning his role in the main universe with a mention in Star Wars Episode 3. There you fucking go. Now, look, I got to admit, I never really got into the Clone Wars. I mean, yeah, burn me at the stake or whatever the fuck it is you basement-dwelling pricks do. But it's true. I went into this having a basic understanding of who Ventress was, without a bias one way or the other, and with Vos having been a favourite for a couple of years. His Fall to the Dark Side is an amazing fucking story, and especially something that you want to read upon when you want to look at the journey of young Anakin towards the journey of the dark side. And, like, I got to admit, the Giffar are just fucking cool. Now, this story really fleshes out both of these characters into real complicated people and has a long, hard look at the morality of the dark side, the light side, and the Force in general. I mean, is it possible to use the dark side of the Force without becoming its slave? Are the Jedi right in what they're doing as far as their role is within the war? Add to this a love affair that is really worthy of the Montagues and Capulets, and you have a novel that, while sometimes obvious as being an adapted script of, you know, three or four different TV shows, is, and I mean, you can definitely see George Lucas's hand in everything in this. It's still a great fucking read, and it'll keep you guessing to the end, and I've got to say, this is by far probably the most adult fucking Star Wars novel we've read to date. I mean, this is the thing you're going to get when you're dealing with dark side, or darker characters that aren't necessarily arch. There's a very mature fucking bent to it. I definitely wouldn't be reading it with the little children. But I found this novel fucking rather interesting, because, like I said, I didn't really know a whole lot about, you know, at least Asajj Ventress during this time. And to see the depths that the Jedi Council were going to towards the end of the Clone Wars is really quite disturbing, and it really does raise the question of, are the Jedi the ones we should be rooting for in this? You know, I mean, clearly, like, the fucking, you know, the fascism of the Empire isn't exactly where we want to go, but did they lose their way a little bit? I mean, it's an interesting little fucking story to look at, and it's an interesting little question to ask yourself, especially with the way the world's fucking going at the moment. So, that brings us to our latest novel. Released in conjunction with Force Friday, we finally come to Aftermath, which they consider the start of the countdown to The Force Awakens, as it is in itself the start of a trilogy that is going to be coming out before December 17th. Now, Aftermath is set some time after Jedi, and it was written in just 45 days by Chuck Wendig, who is a graphic novelist of some note, not necessarily Star Wars novelist of some note. So, Aftermath gives us a classic team-up story with some old favourites, some new favourites, and some good old-fashioned trade-back lines. Some of the notable ones is "Stay on Target," and that is another. Now, look, I'm going to be real careful here. I mean, this book's been out for about a fortnight, but I can honestly say, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to give away any spoilers. So, keeping that in mind, I can honestly say this is one of the most interesting novels to come out since Disney took over the reins of the Star Wars, you know, machine. It gives us some tantalizing glimpses of the state of affairs of the aftermath, funnily enough, of the Battle of Endor, and gives us a look at the state of affairs a few years after that such battle. What the Empire is doing, what the Alliance or the New Republic, so to speak, is doing, and just a, you know, a general fucking health checkup of the galaxy at large. Now, Aftermath follows along as a rebel comes home to find her planet under occupation by the Empire, where it just so happens that Wedge Antilles has been captured as a prisoner by the Empire, who are holding a conclave there. Now, this book has got several interludes that take us all over the galaxy, including in stopping in to see Han and Chewie on a rather dubious mission, and finding out that the man in green and red armor may not be who he is, who we think he is the next time we see him. Not to mention the fallout as a rebellion tries to legitimize itself as a government and a galaxy at large tries to figure out what to do with all the freedom it's suddenly been granted, potentially. All this breaks down into a real action-packed fucking story that is, once again, something you can read with your kids. It's kind of slow in places, and it may not give you enough of the characters that you want, but it does a very good job of introducing some characters that I can see playing some very serious fucking roles in the events to come. Now, of a particular interest, there is a character in this book that, to me, comes across as a very Thrawn-like character. Now, Thrawn was the basis of the first trilogy of books that Chiss Admiral Prick, who was too smart for his own fucking good, and one who was sorely missed once the universe sort of fucking imploded on itself. To see this character sort of come along, and I mean, I have my suspicions on who it is, and I'll let you draw your own suspicions, but if that's where they're going with it, I'm more than okay. All in all, I finished this book about an hour and a half ago, and I'm still fucking riding the high of the Aftermath train. I'm in love. Absolutely in love. So, of course, there's all the five-shot comic books that are out. Disney recently released their Disney Infinity 3.0 on all the major consoles, which features a massive contingent of Star Wars characters and content to play through. Rebels is just about to launch its second season. At the moment, there is Star Wars everywhere. Everywhere you turn around, you're getting a Star Wars dick slap in your face. So, clearly, I'm going to have missed some, but I think covering the books is a good place to start. Start with them books and you're not going to be disappointed, ladies and gentlemen. I haven't come across one that I'm absolutely hating just yet. Now, of course, before we leave, every week we like to read out a Beards and Focus story from our website. You can find those Beards and Focus stories at www.thedrunkenbeardsman.com/beards-in-focus.html, or just search for Beards and Focus on the Googles with the Drunken Beardsman catch sign and you'll find us there. So this week we have another fucking story from the vault. We're starting to catch up. So I mean, if you are listening out there and you have not told your story yet, we would love to hear from you. But this week's story comes from Corey Redder. Now, Corey's from Oakton, which is in the States. You can find him on the Twitters at NovaBeards. You can find him on the Facebook or the Instagram at Nova Facial Hair Club. And his story begins thusly. My story began right after high school in 1996. By the following fall, I had decided to grow the tightly trimmed beard I'd had out. I was happy with how fast it grew, but I was young. So young. I knew nothing of proper grooming. Hell! I didn't even think you groomed a beard. And I knew nobody else with a beard to tell me otherwise. In an act of ignorance, I trimmed it back down. For the next few years, I tried different things. Letting the stash grow out. Mutton chops. Fu Manchu. Goatee. Everything you can think of. Fast forward to 2012 when I got an invite to join a local beard club that was just forming. Unfortunately, in the beginning, I wasn't able to meet them at their monthly pub nights. but I kept at it with the group through Facebook and become friendly with them. The first night I was actually able to meet them was amazing. I was like, finally. People that are just like me, now I can get tips on how to handle it. I was instantly hooked. The biggest thing about bearding and the beard community is that everything we do is for charity. All clubs work with local volunteer groups and work to raise money for various causes. Every beard competition raises thousands for work for worthy local competitions and organisations. It's a small community, and once you've been in it for a while, you know everyone. We're all about giving back and looking out for each other. I'm now Vice President of the Northern Virginia Facial Hair Club, and it's a club filled with great guys and the women that are our better halves. In the last year alone, we've sponsored a local blood drive, been a part of the Dulles Plain Pool, participated in the Arlington National Cemetery Christmas wreath cleanup, as well as adopting a family of seven for the holiday season. We brought each kid two gifts: a new stroller for their newborn, a gift certificate enough to buy a coat for each member, and a full holiday meal. We also raised money for and participated in the Polar Plunge in Virginia Beach. All money went to Virginia Special Olympics. Our club, as well as the other three big clubs in Virginia, raised over $6,000 for the event. We have so much more planned. I bring all this stuff up because, to me, that's more important than why I grew a beard in the first place. This is my bearding life. Yeah, beards are awesome, and not everybody can grow one. Yeah, I look better than with one than without. But to me, the beard is friends, good times, giving back, and seeing all the great friends I've met from all over the world a few times a year at various competitions around the country. Some of the best friends I've ever met are because of the club. You never know how nice people are until you roll in with a beard. I'm bearded, and I'm bearded till I die. Also, hipsters can fuck right off! So that was our beards in focus for this week, to shine a light on beards and the men behind them. So I think we're just about done for this week. I can't imagine what else I've got to talk about. I can't think of anything else I've got to talk about. I hear that theme music buzzing about my ear, which means it's time to go, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you've enjoyed my little foray into Star Wars fandom. Is something I'm quite enjoying, and like I said, I'm still trying to evolve how the show's going to be, which is me by myself for the foreseeable future. Not forever, but definitely for the time being. Find us on the Twitters, on the Facebooks, on the social medias at The Drunken Beardsman or at Drunk Beardsman, depending on what social media you're on. You can find me at The Drunk or Dan everywhere that you care to look. That's about it, I think. Yeah, no, it is. So, until next week, on the same drunk channel at the same bearded time, remember, a beard a philosopher does not make. You don't have to be scared. Just touch it, baby, yeah. I'm a facial hair. Just put your hand right there. There's magic in the air. Oh, darling, yeah, you really want to touch your food. You can't understand. You want it so much. So baby, just reach out your hand and touch. Touch me in the beard. Go ahead and touch. Touch me in the beard. I want you to hold it, stroke it, put your hand inside and say goodbye to all your fears. Just close your eyes and touch me in the beard. I'd like to take this opportunity to present to you that The Drunken Beardsman is presented with much thanks by RVSR Media. Of course, the theme song is provided by The Beards, with much permission and thanks and gratitude by the band itself. You can find them at thebeards.com.au, currently celebrating their 10th year anniversary. The Drunken Beersman would also like to take this time to point out that we only recommend moderate drinking. Drinking to excess is for dumb cunts and fuckwits. Drink responsibly. Love your neighbour. Love yourself. Yeah.
There's magic in the air. And darling, yeah, you really want it, but for reasons you can't understand, you want it so much. So baby, just retouch your hand and touch, touch me in the bed. Go ahead and touch, touch me in the bed. I want you to hold it, stroke it, put your head inside and say goodbye to all your fears. Just close your eyes.
Just go.